Welcome to Give a Heck. I am your host, Dwight Heck, and for much of my life, lived my life in quiet desperation, wondering how I was going to pay the bills, take vacations, save for retirement, and one day wondering if I would get off the hamster wheel of life and have purpose. A life that most of society lives, which takes us to work, then home, then repeat, and pays us hopefully enough just to survive. The harsh truth that most live with more month than money and have no idea how to live life on purpose, not by accident. This ensures the mass majority are living not just financially broke, however emotionally and mentally as well due to financial pressures. In each episode, I will introduce you to thoughts, ideas, and guests that can help you to learn how you too can live life on purpose, not by accident. Good day, and welcome to Give a Heck. On today's show, I welcome Kekua Kabashikawa. Sorry, I've been practicing this, listeners. We're gonna let Kekua say it herself once we're done the bio. Sorry about that. Kekua is a mom, meathead, and best-selling author with a short attention span. Healing from emotional abuse and rebuilding confidence led her to a mission of helping other women grow confidence and self-respect. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Kekua. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on and share with us some of your life journey.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, wherever you are when you listen to this.
Exactly. So pronounce your last name because I messed it up.
Kabashikawa.
There you go. You heard it, rewind it, figure it out. Such a unique first name and last name. Obviously, I'm in a world of North America, like Canada specifically, where you know, you got a name like Dwight, John, Sally. There's all just really simple names. Nothing unique. Like your name is amazing. I love it. So Kekua, tell me your origin story. And the reason I focus on the origin story so much in my podcast is we're a culmination of our life experiences from our earliest recollections to where we are today. Everything affects our lives and people discount that. On my podcast, I don't. For me, it's really important to understand, you know, people's earliest recollections to how it affected them right up to where they are today, because our childhood is a guiding force, and it can be a guiding force to us being successful. It could be a guiding force to us to wanting to change so we can be successful. So it can work either way. So do me a favor and tell me about your origin stories. So the earliest recollections to adulthood that led you to where you're at currently.
That's a unique question. Usually I say that my journey that got me to where I'm at right now started when I got divorced. But if we take it all the way back, you know, the things that led up to my divorce absolutely started in childhood, you know, things about the way that I was raised. And if we go into that, then we also sure. have to acknowledge the way that our parents were raised, because that affects how they raised us. I was born here in Hawaii. My mother left Hawaii when I was very small. She was no longer with my father. So we moved to where my grandparents were living, which was Alabama. She met and fell in love with an army man, and he raised me. So he became my adoptive father. He's on my birth certificate and everything. And the two of them being intelligent enough now, not in my youth, but now I can look back and see how their different upbringings have shaped the way that they raised me, who they are now and who I am now. And I would say that, you know, well, obviously they are my origin. They were people who were traumatized in their own way and kind of passed that on to me. So I grew up as a kid who did not have much self-worth, self-esteem, because they didn't have it to pass on. They grew up raised by a generation of people who were, you know, they came through war. They came through really hard times. They didn't have the luxury of emotional intelligence and the kind of personal development that, well, really, it didn't even exist back then. They didn't have those luxuries that we have now. So as their own damaged people that, you know, work on themselves and are different people today, but the people that they were at the time did their very best. But I grew up with not a lot of self-worth, not a lot of self-esteem, very little belief in myself. And that's the precursor to the divorce that put me onto the path that got me to where I am today. My brother and I, we grew up in Europe, Maryland, Alabama. We moved around a lot, of course, being in the Army. And that colored a lot of my view of the world as well. That it's something that makes me proud of. It's something that I miss. I feel bad for people who never experience other cultures, other places, because it makes you a much more open person. The downside of that for myself is that made me vulnerable to not being happy, because I was way too accommodating. I tried to understand my ex-husband. I tried to understand my ex-boyfriend. I tried to be so nurturing that I ended up becoming totally a doormat to both of them. When there came something that I had to tell my husband no for, we didn't have the money for it. He wanted to buy a home and we didn't have the money for it. And I had to say no, because I wasn't willing to live in abject poverty. That was the downfall of our divorce, because he didn't get what he wanted from me anymore, because that's the person that I was when I could no longer fulfill that role. That was the downfall. After that, I was happier because I was not a happy wife, but I still had not begun to heal the things and mature the things that were lacking in me, because I didn't understand that they were. I fell into a relationship with a narcissist because I had no concept of the possibility that people actually manipulated and abused each other in real life, emotionally speaking. So that low self-esteem, low self-worth made me incredibly vulnerable to that. And I was with him for several years. And it was when I came out of that relationship, and not right away, but as I started to heal from it and understand emotional abuse and narcissism and the things that had happened, I found out how incredibly prevalent that is, because, you know, I'm not the only woman or even person that suffers with low self-worth, low self-esteem, little self-confidence. When I found out how really prevalent it was, that was the trigger that made me want to be the resource for other people that I hadn't had for myself.
Wow. That is great storytelling. Your origin is, there's hopefully listeners, you caught that. If not, rewind it. I can totally hear what you're saying. Low self-worth, low self-esteem. I didn't go through that same roller coaster of moving and living all over the place or having my parents divorce, but I got bullied a lot. I understand that, you know, very little self-worth. I was a doormat. I understand that. I can't imagine though, moving that often, like you said, it colored your view of the world. I could hear some positiveness in there, but then there's the negative side of it. You were trying to please everybody because you were in new environments consistently. Wouldn't that be a fair assessment?
It's pretty close to the mark. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've seen that quite often with people that would come into, you know, move into our community, small little town I lived in, grew up, and how they were treated. They're the new kid. And depending on what they wore, how they looked, is whether or not they were going to be one of the cool kids or one of the picked on kids, which was terrible, right? And parents don't really get that, but the kids take the brunt of it, and it affects our self-esteem. And as you said, you were, you know, you're in a lot of ways you didn't realize it, and you continued to want to please people, and you became a doormat. I was the same way. Growing up, and even as an adult, I got into a marriage where I was married to somebody that was a narcissist, my kids' mom. And I always tried pleasing her. And eventually I couldn't do it anymore. And we parted company. And similar to your husband, couldn't give him the house. But already at that point in time, even before the house, you already had low self-esteem, like you said, low self-worth, and you ended up with another narcissist. Guess what? Pick me. I did the same thing. Went from one narcissist, dated another narcissist, dated another narcissist, because I didn't know how to break that pattern or chain because I didn't have great mentorship, right? I felt that it was always my fault, right? What am I doing wrong? I'm not doing enough. I'm not giving enough. And really, at the end of the day, I didn't know how to love myself. And, you know, our happiness is created by ourselves. When we have proper structure in the sense of mentorship or associations, and, you know, good for you, because I've gotten to know listeners, I've gotten to know Kakua over the last couple years. We've hung out with one another. She's a remarkable person. And now that I know a little bit more about her origin, I'm even more proud of you than I was already for where you are today. You know, you're an accomplished best-selling author. You've created your own brand, and we're going to dive into all that in this podcast. So thank you so much for sharing your origin story. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
So your career in the fitness industry began with teaching classes, which led to training personal clients and managing a fitness facility. What changed your mindset to understanding that the physical aspect was not enough to help people? However, the mental and emotional side that is often overlooked in the chase for physical.
It was, this makes me so emotional every time I talk about it too. I started teaching two different classes. One is called PIO. I don't know if it still exists in group fitness anymore, but it's a mat-based class, so a Pilates yoga kind of a fusion. And the other one was Sumba, which is everybody, now it's worldwide famous. It's huge. Everybody knows it's dancing. And when new people would come to class, they're always, almost always, especially if they're new to the gym and group fitness, the format altogether, they're always at the back of class because they're shy. They don't feel great. They wear clothes that try to hide and cover their entire body, right? They try to shrink. They want to come for the experience, but they're not ready for it yet. They kind of shrink. Over time, as they become familiar with the movements, right, then they get a little bit more comfortable. They might move up a row or two, you know, and then they are not just comfortable, but they're enjoying it. And then they move up another row or two and they try to be in the middle of the class and they're not as afraid of being seen. They're not trying to be seen, but they're not as afraid of it. And you just watch this progression over time where people who come in and they're really wearing the frumpiest clothes that they can find because they want to be invisible. They hide in the back, and over time they become confident. They become joyous. There's a light that turns on. Watching them feel good about their body is great, but that light is everything.
And so many people never ever have that light. So it's so important for them to discover that. I can feel, you know, I feel exactly what you're saying, that emotional thing and what you're talking about in regards to wearing big clothes, wanting to be at the back. And as they discover the fact of how good it is for them, their confidence levels go up and their self-esteem goes up. But that isn't enough. You were noticing that. So what was the progression from that point that helped you realize that it was a good start, but wasn't enough?
It was, you know, it took a few years. There was, my students used to call them my PSAs. You learn slowly. You know, in any industry, you learn the bullshit that comes along with it, right? And fitness is no exception. There are plenty of people, because what you do is so much of a performance. Like, I have to perform when I'm teaching that class because they need to receive my energy. So you can get, you know, incredibly big-headed. You can get people who are, they're really not there because they want to change lives. They're there because it fills a need for them, that performance. It really does. Like if you're a performance person, it will fill a little bit of that need. But as I was, you know, in the industry and I slowly started to see the quote unquote seedy underbelly, it pushed me away. I hit a point where I was a little bit burnt out on it. I didn't like the drama that was a part of it. I didn't like the diva mentality that, you know, I got from some people. And I really did hit a point where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. It doesn't feel good to me anymore. And it's my students that kept me in, because I had not yet come to the realization of how much impact I could have on them. In my head, I was still just, I go there and I make you have fun. And that's all there really is to it. Because you're not building muscle. You're not, you know, really losing weight because you go to the buffet after this. I'm just here to make you have fun. And when I wanted to dip out of that, and they came to me and they were like, you can't leave. And they tell you all the things that you can't see it on their face. You can't see it when they're dancing. You know, they just look like they're maybe having a little fun. When you start to learn what kind of an impact you can have, if you're anything like you and I are, you can't shirk that. There's so much weight that comes with it, and there's responsibility, and like, what kind of person could I be if I just toss that aside?
Yeah, I can feel the pain that you were picking up from them just talking to you about it. You're right though. Too many people would just walk away, but you and I couldn't do that. And I don't know if you are. I know I am. I've come to a massive realization that I'm an empath, and I hear and see that in you, that you pick up on that. Because how could you not have some sort of empathetic, you know, empath abilities or tendencies without getting you're emotional about it? I'm the same way. I get emotional when I talk about certain things, as I had mentioned to you earlier, when I'm on podcasts or I interview people. You can pick up on people's sadness, even though those people were hiding things and their face doesn't tell. You can still see and hear in tonality, or the fact that they don't know how to escape, and their joy is, like you said, you can't leave. They want you to stay because that's their only bright shining star. Maybe they're going home to an abusive relationship or going back to a shitty job, you know, the next day or whatever the case may be. We have so many, I know a lot of people are offended by the term, but broken is an epidemic. It's like cancer. There's so many broken people. And you noticing that and wanting to level up and be able to help them further from that, that's admirable. That's amazing. So that tells me that you, as my friend, are an empath, because just seeing you, for those that are watching, you can understand, mm-hmm. Listeners, this is very emotional for her, and rightfully so. I can feel myself. I can feel, you know, I stopped breathing for a moment. And my chest got tight, and it's not a bad thing. That's an indicator that, oh my gosh, I've just experienced, I have this, you've created an emotional connection and a feeling for me. And I don't even have to be, wasn't even in that circumstance, right? So good for you for realizing that and recognizing it. So where did you go from there at that point?
That was right around the time that I thought, so this is where my ex-boyfriend comes in. Around the same time, I was feeling like I wish I had things that were representative of myself, because I had grown out of the group exercise room for my personal journey into the weight room. So this was the start of being a meathead, which is lifelong now.
Yeah.
a part of that was, you know, I wanted clothing that kind of reflected who I was, because much of what I saw was very, it was either this or that. Like, you were either hardcore, or you were a metalhead, and you were, you know, you didn't do any of that dancing or exercising stuff. You only lifted weights. Or it was the other stuff, and it was very frou-frou, la-la, like, I'm a gym buddy, and like, that's cool and stuff, but what about those of us who do both? And as I was talking to my ex-boyfriend at the time, I was like, you know, I wish I could just make my own clothes, because I can't find the clothes that I feel like represent everything that I am. And he had had an uncle that had a clothing business where he was originally from. And he was like, you know, we can do that. It's not that hard. I'm like, what do you mean it's not that hard? He was like, well, it's not that hard. I've seen it. I worked with my uncle. So from there, I decided to create a clothing line. And a part of that process was that I had discovered Arete, which is how you and I met, which was a mastermind for having a higher level of thinking. And it originated in business, but I would say, and I think you would agree, that it was really more life coaching. At least that's how I experienced it. So while the origins came out of business, and I started listening to Andy Frisella because he talked about business, Arete helped me level my life up completely in more ways than business. So fast forwarding from that, as I was healing from that same relationship where there was so much emotional abuse, I recognized that in Arete, in the people that I met, in the women that I had created a family with from the gym, I had resources that, as I mentioned, all the other women who go through similar things or physical abuse or just feel negated in life, they don't have those resources. They don't have that strong circle of friends. They don't have somebody they could call. They don't have the education on how to change the way they think and change the way they feel. And that was what took me from staying in fitness, because I knew I could help change lives in that format, to realizing that I could help women find that spark outside of fitness and share that to their entire life in a more effective way than focusing on their body. Because focusing on their body is a gateway. To me, fitness was like, it was like a gateway drug.
Yeah.
Fitness was the thing that made me start to love myself. And that was what made them start to love themselves. But I understood, because I had had the resources, that, you know, you can fast track that with more resources. If I can be a bigger resource to you, then here's how you lift these weights. Here's how you slim down. Here's how you do things physically. I could do all of that for your mind. And then how much faster can the world change if we can teach people how to love themselves without needing the little gateway? Fitness should come along with it. It shouldn't be the only way we find that love for ourselves. Because at the end of the day, that love is still starting on the outside. If you only love yourself because you lost 20 pounds, if you only love yourself now because, you know, you look different in your jeans, that love is not coming from the inside. And if I can teach you how to build that love from the inside out, you'll want to do those things. You'll want to look good in your jeans. You'll want to lose weight if you need to. But that won't be the crux of what makes you feel like a worthy person.
Well, that makes sense though too, because, you know, you talk about fitness being the gateway drug. Problem is if they haven't worked on their 6 inches and they're not empowered, they're literally still going back to the same garbage. So the only highlight of their day is that workout. Mm-hmm. Right? Whether it's, you know, working in a group or whether it's pumping weights or whatever it is, whether it's, you know, doing Zumba or being a meathead, like you would say. So you noticed all of this because you also experienced it, right? So that's what makes you even that better of somebody that's out empowering and helping women. And I think personally myself, you can empower both. And I'm not saying you shouldn't focus just on women. I know myself, just getting to know you and meet you and having conversations, you're good for men too, right? You empower people, not just women. If somebody hasn't told you that, I'm telling you that. You know, I think that you're, as you progress forward with your brand and your coaching business, I believe both sexes, I believe anybody, no matter how they identify, whether or not it's male or female, can benefit from the strife, the trials and tribulations that you've experienced on your journey, and realizing, like you said, like, okay, great. Now you've worked out. Now you've had that endorphin hit. Now what? What about the other six? What about your 6 inches between your ears that pumping weights doesn't take care of? Because that endorphin hit is temporary. I know I went through so much garbage, and I'd go to the gym. I remember going through my divorce and going to the gym every day. I had a buddy of mine. We'd go every single day. And that was the only thing I looked forward to, right? I had a bunch of kids. I was going to a divorce. I felt miserable. I had low self-esteem. And I wish somebody like you would have been there to say, you know what? It's not just about working out. We need to work on that 6 inches between your ears, Dwight. It'll help strengthen you. It'll help you feel good about yourself. I'm going to teach you how you can make yourself happy. And I'm going to give you the tools and arm you. So, wow, that is, I am so enjoying this conversation. Listeners or people watching this on YouTube, I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. And we're going to even learn more. We're going to go on to the next part. So as an empowerment coach, because that's what you are, you work to help women change the world by teaching them to take control of their life and generational trauma and develop self-love and self-respect. Can you share some of the process you have developed and used to help women climb above their circumstances? And as you say, do big shit.
I come at it from two directions, because everybody, what I have found is they either need to do some big shit to change the reputation that they have within and develop that love and respect for themselves, or they have to come from the other side and they have to understand that they're worthy of love and respect before they're capable of doing the big shit. But if they don't start in either direction, they just kind of, and I'm sure that you've worked with plenty of people like this, they just kind of spin around in a circle, because they take a step or two in either direction, but without any kind of focus, they kind of, then they take a step or two back in the other direction. And then they just kind of, you know, back and forth, and they never accomplish either one. And some of that comes from, I think, our natural biology, that we are a pack animal. And we look for someone else's validation and permission, that it's acceptable amongst our pack to do these things. Like, but you and I know that that's not going to come from other people until we've done it. No one's going to have belief in you that you can do big shit. No one's going to have belief that you respect and love yourself until they see it. Very few people in our life are going to see that struggle within us and push us towards it, which is why it's so critical to find someone that can teach you to get on that road.
Do you also educate how to escape their circumstances? Because even if you help them, like you said, two steps forward, two steps back, if they're going home and that two steps back is their significant other or their job, do you coach and work with that sort of thing too, to help them?
In as much as the mindset that it takes to work with the person that they have, yes. I haven't personally worked with anyone who is still within a dangerous situation where they're in physical abuse and it's really imperative for them to get out. So I don't want to speak on that as if I have experience, because I don't. I've worked with people who they're out of that and they're trying to look at how to quote unquote fix themselves, because they think of themselves as broken.
Okay.
But I haven't worked with anyone who is in the midst of it and needs to get out of it.
Well, you'd probably say, you'd probably, like most people, you're best off to send them to a professional that can help them at that level. So that's what I was trying to get to. So you're finding the people after they've escaped, but yet they're still broken. They have low self-esteem, such as yourself. And I went through and feeling like a doormat, having been with narcissists, it takes a toll. They literally, you know, shred what little bit of, you know, self-esteem we have and make us feel like we're garbage. Right. So that's important for the listeners and even myself to understand, you know, where are you starting? So you're finding people, they're coming to the gym, and now past that part, you're working with people that you're not even finding at a gym. You're out with your book. Of course, that's a giant, Mike would say, it's a giant calling card. It lets people know and allows people to read about the vulnerability that we're sharing and giving up to them so that they can relate and understand we can help them. So you've gone well past that gym where it all started, watching people frumpy clothes, watching people, you know, wishing that they didn't have to leave. They didn't want you to leave because that's their only salvation. Maybe now you've gone and advanced yourself. They're quitting their brokenness of their relationship, whether it's a job relationship, whether it's a significant other, maybe it's both. And you're giving them a lifeline to rebuild what's left of themselves, right? Because I know I felt disheveled. I didn't feel worthy. I just went to work, go home, get paid. I was living on that hamster wheel of life, and having somebody like you in my life would have made a huge difference. So kudos to you for doing what you're doing, you know, and like you said, you know, you want to help them do big shit, change how they feel about themselves. How do they see themselves? And that's quite the process. So would you say that some people just get it right away, or is it a long process?
I think for most of us, it's kind of a long process. We get it in terms of understanding it, but you've got to root out all that unconscious programming that keeps you from moving forward, because it's easy to understand, you know, I need to do A, B, C, and D. Actually being able to do it, I like to compare it to, I can tell you how to surf. I can surf. I can't surf. I can tell you what you need to do. I know, I understand it. I've tried it several times. I've ridden waves. I do not call myself a surfer. So it's that difference between understanding what you need to do and being capable of doing it it's a world of difference. It's a world of difference, because we've got to understand what's stopping us from doing it. And we all have, you know, a variety of things that are running underneath the surface that we're not aware of all the time that really impede us from getting where we want to get. And, you know, I know you understand that because we all go through it. You went into repeated narcissistic relationships because you didn't understand the stuff that was making you do it over and over, right? So on the surface, we'll think this is my fault. And because of the conditioning that we go through, we think this is my fault. This is my fault. I made him do this. I made her say that. If we can understand how we actually made it happen through all of that subconscious programming, we can make it stop happening. You know, we can make different things happen.
But it has to start somewhere, right? And that's what you're helping people with. I guess it starts with even them approaching you, communicating with you. I was reading your testimonials on your site for the people that you've helped. Obviously, they have to be the willing. I know in my business with the coaching I do and lifestyle coaching and finance coaching, they have to be the willing. They have to be willing to understand. They may not know how to break that programming that's running the patterns, right? Like you said, one narcissist to another, that's what I was ending up doing. I even had friends like that. I had to not just dispel, you know, romantic relationships. I had to dispel friendships because even my friends were narcissists, you know, that were using me as a doormat. And then once I realized that I didn't quite get it, but you put it great, right? We have our programming. We're programmed and it's running and we follow this, that program. How do we stop that continual programming run? But in order for me to do that, I had to realize I was broken and I had to admit it, just like it's an addiction, I guess is a way to put it, because people are addicted to alcohol and drugs, or they're addicted to sex. They're addicted to being negative. They're addicted to television. The addiction, you need to admit it. Yes, I'm addicted. Well, it was tough for me to admit. I don't know about yourself or the people that you've coached, but it's tough. It's tough to admit that we're broken and that we're stuck in a rut.
It was hard to, I don't think the admitting it part was hard once I got there, but the process that it took to recognize that, that hurt. Like I thought of myself as a confident person, as a strong person. I've always been rather loud, outspoken, you know. Nobody would have looked at me and thought she's insecure on the inside. Nobody would have looked at me and thought that I had low self-worth because I was so large of personality. So recognizing, man, recognizing.
Was that your mask though? Was that the mask you were wearing? Because you said you were, nobody knew because you were so boisterous and loud and real as life. Was that a mask you were wearing to cover up all that stuff?
I think certainly a part of it was, not completely, because my personality is still a strong personality. I understand now that I can be a little bit overwhelming for some people because I have a tendency to be very direct and be very outspoken, not with the intention of overpowering anyone, but sometimes when I'm focused on something, I don't necessarily realize how it's coming across. And that's been a part of the work that I have to do. I understand that so much more now, in coming to understand the things that, you know, were going on under the surface. So discovering my insecurity was a process of trying to understand why certain things triggered me, right? Because when we get triggered either to anger or pain or jealousy or whatever, when we have that knee-jerk reaction to something, that's absolutely an arrow. Like that's a little neon sign flickering on top of our insecurity, but it's not saying insecurity, it's saying something else. It's saying that person is wrong. It's saying, you know, any variety of things. And I had to try to understand, like, I think I'm a feminist. I think I am empowering. I think I support other women. Why do I hate those girls over there? Why do I not want
to? You had conflicting messages within your own thoughts.
Right. I was very much, because I was, you know, I'm a strong girl, but strong could only be in the way that I was strong. You couldn't be strong and have your hair did all the time and your nails done, and you couldn't have soft skin on your hands. You know, you had to be the same kind of strong that I was. And it took, I'm going to say this was a good year of continual deep dives into myself and examining my behavior and my thought process to understand I hated those girls over there because they weren't like me. Okay, well, what's wrong with not being like me? Oh, well, I feel insecure about the way that they are because I don't have that. I can't do that delicate. I can't do that kind of feminine. And so that was the root of my insecurity. I didn't like them because what I saw in them was what I felt like I lacked. I felt like I couldn't be feminine. And I had to recognize that. And that was the part that hurt, like that I wasn't as much of a feminist as I thought I was. I wasn't as empowering as I thought I was. And when I recognized that, it, like really, it was the trigger to so many other realizations about myself. And in that time, I was, as I mentioned, in Arte, I was doing a lot of reading. So, you know, Joe Dispenza had influenced. There's a man whose podcast, I don't listen to it as often as I used to, but it's called The Model Health Show. And he goes into all kinds of different aspects of health and fitness, which is how I discovered him. But he talks about some of those subconscious things and things that he thought. And just listening to people who had had those same realizations and who understood that there is subconscious programming running all the time made me start to dig deeper into other things. Well, why don't I like this? Why do I get upset so quickly when that happens? Why? And it was a painful but beautiful process, because when you understand why you're doing things and that so much of it is rooted in insecurity, you can say, well, why the fuck am I insecure about that? Am I lacking in that way? Am I unable to take care of myself in that way? Am I, you know, is there some deficiency, true deficiency at the base of this? Or is it just rooted in some kind of stupid one comment that someone said maybe when you were 12, or the habits that your mom had when you were growing up, or, you know, things that don't actually affect your life, but they're affecting your life because you are thinking them daily.
They're code within your programming, right? Whether it's running every day or it's running every hour, it affects you. You know, like as you were talking there, I was thinking about, you found your tribe that was willing to, that you were willing to listen to, whether it was a podcast, that Model Health show, or, you know, it was Arate. It made you think differently so that you could work on yourself. And like you said, it can be a painful process. I've gone through it myself. I've had so much evolution and change. And once you discover it, you start changing. You're going to work on yourself the rest of your life till you take your last breath, because it's actually very fulfilling to know that it's okay to be human. I'm not perfect and I can work on myself. And it's okay to shed all the dead weight, or like I wrote down here, shed skin. You shed the skin of all the people in your life that have held you back, that have not been, you know, the most, what's the word I'm looking for? The best for us between our 6 inches. They're not really our cheerleaders. They're not really our fans. They're not people that are going to be politically blunt with us. Compassionately blunt, pardon me, but you know, they're gonna say it. They're gonna be somebody that's gone farther than us. They're wordsmiths, maybe from that podcast or from Arte. Somebody said something and made you go initially like, that person's an asshole.
Yeah.
And then an hour later you're going, oh my gosh, why did I think they were an asshole? Well, because there's a lot of truth to it. We see it's a reflection. This is, you mentioned when you, about women that you'd see and you were like, you didn't like them, but it was because you seen something in them that you wanted and you didn't have. So it was easier to not like. I've been there. Sometimes it still happens. I'm not perfect. I have to check my thought process, because I'll all of a sudden read a post, or I'll have somebody say they've been successful at something, and I feel that jealousy creep in, and it's like, why am I jealous of them? I should be like, yeah, good for you. You know what I mean? Like, so listeners, I don't know about you, but I can sure relate to everything Akua is saying, and it is phenomenal. A couple other things I want to get into here. I was reading about how HBIC came about. Could you please share with the listeners exactly what that stands for, the stigma around the word bitch, and how society puts negative words, names, labels on us to tear us down?
So it stands for head bitch in charge. And that's a play off of when I was young, in the, let's say, high school, middle school to high school years of my life. We lived outside of DC in Baltimore. And something that was very common there was HNIC. And that stood for head N-word in charge. And it was a way that they had taken that back from being, I mean, it's still a very hateful word, but it was the beginning of a process in that area where they had taken that back. So that meant like, I'm, you know, nowadays they would say I'm a boss. I'm a shot caller. I run things. And it, so it was my way of taking the word back. Like when you are strong and opinionated and outspoken as a female, there are all kinds of words put on you, because there are a lot of men who, through their insecurity, they don't like that. Because if you're strong, then they can't feel strong. They need you to be small in order for them to feel large. So I'm, you know, I know, you know, there are many men out there who throw that word around on anyone who is a strong man-like.
It's horrible. It's horrible because my daughters have gone through it, and a lot of my female friends, and I stick up for it when I've heard it. If I'm in a room and I hear it, you better watch out, because that's so disrespectful, and it's not designed to be a word. It should be an empowering thing. Like, you've taken it back.
That's the way I see it. Like, I'm taking it back. If you're going to say those things about me because of those characteristics, well, I'm still going to have those characteristics. I'm never not going to speak up when I see things that I think need to be spoken about. I'm never not going to have my own opinion ever again. I'm never going to not be all of those things that you're assigning this name to. So that's my name now. That's my word.
That's awesome.
If you want to say it, you can say it. I'm going to stand inside of it completely.
Well, and yeah, it's just unfortunate how our world has put so many negative connotations on specific words. And really, when you've just said, screw you guys, like, F you, I'm going to use this as an empowering thing. I'm taking it back. I'm not going to change who I am. You don't like it? Go ahead and call me it. All it's going to do is give me power. It's going to give me energy, because I know you're a weak-minded individual, a weak little man, because men are, like you said, the odd time women will call each other that too, but you're right, predominantly it's men. And you're literally like, bring it on. I'll take all that energy on. Call me that. All it's going to do is, you know, make my resolve to be the person I am, and that I'm continuing to become even more solidified. So that's great. I love that. And obviously I knew what it meant, but I wanted you to say it. It made me smile when I was reading on your website, when I was prepping for the show. It was just like, yeah, I gotta, that has to be a question I ask, right? Because
it's funny to me, because when people throw around words and insults like that, especially when they're talking, like, I'm insulting you because you're strong, all they're doing is saying, I feel weak. I feel inferior. I feel smaller than you.
They're insignificant. They're insecure, whatever the case may be. And eventually our tribe grows out, or those people fall off a cliff. And anybody that does do it after the fact is just like, whatever, right? Yeah. You know, whatever you say just bounces off to me and sticks back on you like glue, because you're a loser. Like, yeah. You know, that may sound harsh, but I've gotten to that point. I don't care. Go ahead. Call me whatever you want. Right. I've been called everything under the sun. I don't care. So good for you. So the next thing I want to talk about is in your book, Do Big Shit, The Roadmap to Taking Charge of Your Life. You teach women how to define and build their ideal life, create happiness and connection in their family, and develop a deep love and respect for themselves. Tell us more about the book, and were there challenges putting down your vulnerabilities, your thoughts to paper?
Oh, there were definitely challenges. There were, prior to writing the book, and this was a long process for me because I had to get over that. I wouldn't say I was hiding it, but it was not a public part of my life that my ex was an emotional abuser. It was, because for me, that was shameful. Like, I can't have that in my past. I'm a strong woman. I can't have been through that. I'm confident. I cannot have been the woman that fell into, that was a victim to someone else. And as I was writing the book, I had to understand that without the pieces of my story that make these lessons make sense, no one's going to connect to it in a way that they can take that lesson and run with it. Because then I'm just standing at the front of the class and just saying things at them instead of to them. And, you know, we all know how that falls on deaf ears. So if I wanted to put out this resource and have it actually valuable, have it actually do what I wanted it to do, I had to reveal that part of my own past. And that was difficult. But once I made the decision that I wasn't going to hide any more of it, which I didn't realize that I was hiding it, I thought I was just not offering it up. I realized I was hiding, in fact, pieces of who I am, pieces that were critical to helping other people. And letting go of that was incredibly freeing. And truthfully, I thought that I had managed to completely inhabit my entire being before I wrote this book. I thought that was why I was called to write it. And it was not until I went through the process of writing it that I expanded into everything that I want to be.
So the writing a book, though, I know for myself, and I'm hearing it from you, is very, what is that the word, cathartic? It's very healing. It helped me. Like I struggled. I sat here and I'd be 4 or 5 hours reviewing a chapter, changing it around. Oh, I'm going to take this out. No, I'm putting it back. Oh, I should add this. And I'd be so emotional. I was so drained. It was just like, oh my gosh, I need to go take a nap. Right. And it was very emotional, but it was very cathartic. It was very good for me to admit on paper and be vulnerable to the world, which I initially didn't think I could be. Right. And I had been told for years that I should write a book. So you and I both, it's a healing. It was a trigger. We had healed in that many ways, but once you start putting it on print, putting it on paper, you realize that you really haven't dealt with everything.
Yeah. Because when you actually take everything out of the garage, you realize how little you had actually organized and how much of it you just hid to the side. What's stuffed under the bed? What's behind the sofa?
What did you put in that compartment in the back of your head? And it's been compartmentalized and you've taken big nails and closed it up and refused to open it and denied that it ever happened. And when you start writing about your life and your vulnerabilities, that door can't stay closed.
It really can't.
And I had some, I don't know if you had this epiphanies. I'd be writing and all of a sudden I'd have something pop into my head. I completely forgot about it. It was just like, what?
Yeah.
That couldn't have been true. That can't be, you know what I mean? And then I'd have to accept it. And oh my gosh, it was really quite the experience. I know listeners, if you've never written a book or you know somebody that's written a book, ask them about it. If they're going to be honest and genuine with you, it is like, it's a very healing process. But you literally, I dropped a bunch of masks that I still had on. I thought I didn't have them anymore.
I think about them like anchors, right? Matt, you're rowing through the boat, the sea of life, and your boat is only so big. And if every time something happens to you, you don't let it go, it's like another anchor in your boat. And it might not sink you, but at some point, it's a hell of a lot of effort to keep moving forward. And if you never cut the strings or the chains and get rid of that stuff, it's going to weigh you down for the rest of your life. And there are so many things that, like, we just don't even think about them. We just don't tell anybody. Nobody has to know this. This is not something I want to tell the world. And every single time, you're hiding a piece of yourself. You're hiding what someone else did to you or made you feel or some effect that another person had on you, but you are hiding you. It's not the other person that you're hiding. It's your reaction. It's your response. It's your emotional state. It's you that you're putting into a little box. It's you that you're cutting out and hiding away. You're not saving anybody else. You're not saving face for anybody else. You're not making anybody else look better because other people can see what kind of person that was. other people knew what kind of man I was in a relationship with. They saw it before I did.
Me too. People seeing it. I had people the day of my wedding begging me not to go through with it.
Wow.
I'm serious, right? Family, friends. And I was just like young, 23 years old. Like, what the fuck do you know? I know what I'm doing in life and I love her and blah, blah, blah. And the writing was on the wall, right? I just chose to ignore it and paint over it and then put myself through. Well, at least I had some, you know, wonderful kids from the circumstance of the narcissism and the torture. But you're right. The people, this is our story. We wrote it. It helped us out. And for me, it's a stepping stone to so much more healing that I still have to go through. But now it's forced me to have even more realization of how I had fooled myself into thinking I had healed. Yeah. But there was still a lot of brokenness that I'm working on, right? And that's okay.
Right? You have to clean that wound out. If you just slap on a Band-Aid and all that bacteria stays there, you know, you've got to take that off and let it breathe.
Exactly. So I appreciate you sharing that. Listeners, buy her book. I have. You need it too. And on that note, Kakua, if you had to give our listeners one last closing message, what would you tell them in regards to giving a heck and never giving up?
Whatever it is that you have in your mind right now, whatever came to you in the moment that he asked that question, you deserve it. You deserve it. You deserve everything you're willing to work for. Wow. Whether that's in your career, in your love life, better relationships with your children, your parents, you deserve every happiness that you're willing to put in your life.
Wow. I love that. As a first, that's probably, you know, out of 69 recordings I've done, that is the best last closing message.
Oh, like
whatever, honestly, anybody that just, you heard that, rewind it again. Whatever you thought of while I was saying that, you deserve it. I love that. I love that. That is just, I felt gladness and my heart just swelled. And I felt, you know, I felt the warm fuzzies when you said that. It was just, that's a great way to look at it. So thank you so much for sharing. So our time is almost up and I want to respect our listeners and your time. However, before we end, can you please tell the listeners, what is the best way to reach you?
They can find me on my website. There's a contact form. That's kekuak.com, kekuak.com. I am on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. On Facebook, it's my name, Kekua Kobashigawa. On Instagram and TikTok, it's HBIC Kekua, K-E-K-U-A.
I'll make sure that it's in listeners and or anybody watching. Just go to giveaheck.com/podcast. You'll be able to check out the show notes. I'll ensure that everything Kekua just said is going to be in there so you can easily access her. And for those of you that are sitting on the cusp, I've had this happen where you don't want to directly because you're sitting on that fence, you're unsure and you're comfortable with me, reach out to me and I will connect you. I promise you, you do not have to because some people are nervous. They don't want to directly connect to you, but yet they've got comfortable with me after 60 some episodes, or they've known me for a few years, or they listen to my, you know, one of my 670 some B-logs I've been doing. I don't mind connecting people if they're nervous, because there's a lot of value in what Kakua can help you with. So I appreciate you being on the show. Thanks so much. It's been unbelievably fantastic. I can't wait to listen back to this and continue on with some of my notes because I was writing so fast I couldn't keep up. So thanks so much for being on Give a Heck, Kakua. I appreciate your time and sharing some of your experiences so that others too can learn it is never too late to give a heck. Thank you for taking time out of your day and listening to Give a Heck. If you find value, I'd appreciate you sharing with your friends and family so they too can learn how to live life on purpose, not by accident. So you do not miss the next episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and please also post a review. I look forward to reading your comments. This has been Dwight Heck. If you want to check out other podcast episodes or today's show notes, please check out my website, giveaheck.com. And until next time, together, let us all strive to give a heck.